Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
From the Chris Wessling Podcast Studio, it's Around the NFL, colon, 21 Questions with Daniel Jeremiah. I asked the sound team and Justin, our producer, to find something that sounded like 21 Questions by 50 Cent.
Oh.
And obviously, this is a dead ringer. Girl, what's up, DJ?
Nothing makes me feel more important than not even having lights on me in here in the studio. It's like you guys are lit up like Christmas trees over here, and I'm just like coming out of the dark over here in my old black outfit.
Did you see my pre-production notes about how to light Daniel Jeremiah on our show?
I noticed my chair was really low. Yeah, the whole setup
here. You have a disturbing shadow on the right side of your face on the screen here.
I know. It's a motivation to watch us on YouTube to see how much better looking we are than DJ
there we go.
Today.
That's true.
I thought you were going for like a early 90s R&B vibe, because that's all Daniel Jeremiah listens to.
Yeah, you had some, you were tape dogging recently.
Oh, every year.
And what did you have playing on Spotify?
This is out of my wheelhouse a little bit, but I landed on 80s and 90s duets. Duets.
Duets.
By the way, wow. Linda Ronstadt, a lot of jams back in that period of time. Yep. Who knew? Aaron Neville on his game in
Rich
the duet
territory.
Space. Yeah.
I've always wanted to ask you, like, you know, sometimes when you're watching like Game Pass and stuff, and it's like you're on your third game and it's like silent, you just sort of nod off. Do you ever just flat out fall asleep watching prospects, and what does that say about them?
So, well, it happens good and bad. Like, I was watching Dalton Kincaid, who's one of my favorite players out of Utah, and they're playing SC, and you know, I don't know exactly what happened in these games from the fall, so I'm just watching it, and I'm watching all of his targets, and so he had like 18 catches in that game. So after about the 14th catch, I was like, I must be hitting the rewind. How many catches does this guy have in this game? I literally thought I was totally just dozed off, not paying attention. I did not know what was going on.
It happens. Those Mondays after the long Sunday, and you're just grinding through the Game Pass games. Sometimes it's like, wait, it's late in the third quarter now? Yeah,
half a person.
Oh, okay. Should I rewind? decisions. DJ.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You for the time, because we know you're a busy man. You're a popular man. Your metrics are off the chain. People are talking about you at all times. People are coming up to you asking for selfies. It just so happened recently someone had approached you.
True.
Do you want to share that
story? Sure, I'll just give you the cliff notes. Yeah. I was at a Chick-fil-A, which I'm often at. By the way, this place makes so much money off me on events, because whatever our per diem is, it's like my $6 Chick-fil-A dinner every single night. But I'm there with my son. Guy comes up to me, couldn't have been nicer, shows me his phone. He just listened to one of our episodes. It was just a lovely conversation. And as we're finishing up, he goes, I do have to tell you, I do really like ATN.
ATN.
It was like we didn't want to start our relationship out, you know, not on a solid, honest footing.
Now,
so
if he said I did like ATN better, that would have been a real
I think the fact that he brought it up probably tells me that he did, but he didn't go quite that far.
Did he indicate in the world of this show which person on the show is his favorite? Well, I'm just in it. I know, maybe you're not telling us the whole story. All right, well, that was a false wink you gave me.
The rule generally is just placate Mark, and then we can continue with the show. All right, this is what we're going to do.
Yes, sir.
We have 21 questions for you concerning the 2023 NFL draft. We're going to...
I mean, I don't even feel like my teeth are white, but I'm so dark over here that I feel like Ross from Friends right now. I mean... Just coming out of the darkness.
Justin, can we get the lighting right on our guest?
He's being a diva about it. This is lovely. It's a mood. What do we got?
We're going to go through the draft. 21 questions. If we run out of time, because Jeremiah said, I have a heart out. That's what he said to me.
That's a lie.
He grabbed me by the collar and said, heart out, bitch. And I said, okay. We don't want to keep you for too long.
Yes, sir.
But we're going to hit 21 questions. Okay. Greg, you feel like this could be a challenge for us.
Well, we'll try to go fast at the end then.
If we have to.
I'm just saying if we...
What if it goes the other way? What if we have 21 questions done in about 8 minutes?
Okay. I don't think that's going to happen.
That's not our
We've taken 5 minutes to get to the first question.
All right. So, by the way, do you like this draft class? Where do you rank this one, let's say, in the last 10 years?
Is this one of the questions? Do we get a ding for each question?
That's a good one.
That was more like setting the table.
But that's a perfect start.
All right, there's a question.
Okay.
Well, that's a great question, Dan.
Thank you.
Starting us off here with a real humdinger. They're number one. Literally, could have gone anywhere you wanted. That's where you went. Anyways, let's look at it from the standpoint that we've got quarterbacks. So if we've got quarterbacks, I always say that's good. It's good for us. Obviously, we got talking points, and it's fun to look at. I think we've got 5 starting quarterbacks in this draft class, Hendon Hooker being the 5th, right behind the big 4 that we're going to talk a lot about, I'm sure. But outside of that, it's the best tight end group we've had in a decade. So if you look individually there, that's outstanding. I really like the depth of the corners. I like the depth of the edge rushers. But running backs is good as well. But, to me, overall, receiver group's not really what it's been in the last few years. Linebacker group's not great. It's middle of the road, but the kicker being we've got quarterbacks.
Well, I'll start there then with the quarterbacks, because from the limited amount of tape dogging I've been trying to do lately, I've almost been feeling like these guys at the top, and I'm talking Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, maybe as the big two, were almost undersold to me in what I heard as like what this class was going to be and the reputation. And I look at the two of them, and especially Stroud, considering he's kind of been at that 2 or well below Young level, and think like, what does this guy not have? Because if you compare him to guys coming out like Herbert at the time, we didn't know what Herbert was going to be, or Tua at the time, or Jameis, who was like kind of a lock number one, or even if you put Stroud in last year's class, I feel like someone would have been trading up to one and everyone would have thought, that's great. Like, what am I missing that what this guy doesn't have? Because it seems like he has basically everything.
It's really good. I think both those guys, to me, there's a gap between those two and then the next two. But, Greg, I can't really argue with it. I think, I'm a Bryce Young believer. I think it's easy to say, but if he was a little bit taller, we'd be talking about him like we were talking about Joe Burrow coming out. I think we'd be talking about him like we were talking about Trevor Lawrence coming out. I think he's that good. Obviously, you got to get around the size. But with Stroud specifically, there's some games you watch where he doesn't play to that level. You can look at individual games and moments, the biggest being, the last game that he played against Georgia. It shows you everything that you want to see.
But even the Michigan game before that, the other biggest game of his season.
Yes, but there are other games sprinkled in there when you watch him and you're like, okay, not his best. Northwestern I throw out because the weather was terrible in that game with rain and wind. But I think, some of the off-schedule stuff, some of the pocket feel, those things, I think he's good. I don't think he's at an elite level. I would take him. I have a higher grade on him than I had on Kenny Pickett last year, so he would have been the top quarterback in last year's class, and you're probably right. Going through the process last year, somebody would have traded up for him. They're going to go 1-2. I mean, we can say they're being disrespected, but I don't know how you're going to be the first or second pick in the draft.
I guess it's just more like watching him is exciting to me, that it seems like he gets through progressions quickly. He's incredibly accurate, and his pocket movement I thought was great, like in terms of like making room, and that to me seems like someone that Frank Reich would like at one, and just like what I don't know.
He stands out to me as like the best thrower, and that just watching him
he's a natural thrower.
It is so natural, and it's just like, why would people not be totally fun? Now, if he's going to go second, they are falling in love with him. But I have a question for you about, let's say you're Chris.
You just abandoned that whole thing. We were just going down a road, and now you guys are so hung up on 21 questions.
I
don't want this to be one of my officials, so we got to just change the subject. We had such a good thing going right there.
Well, we've got to keep
it
going.
I like that he's coaching. The 21 thing does put pressure on it.
Let's say
pressure is not a bad thing. Pressure
I want to say you're
diamonds.
Chris Ballard, okay?
Okay.
And you have, because I know Jim Irsay is sort of saying, I'm not into the guaranteed money for Lamar Jackson, for instance.
Yeah.
But let's say you get the green light to pursue Lamar Jackson, but you would know in your mind that Anthony Richardson on a rookie contract would sit there at number 4 for the Colts. Mm. A different type of quarterback than we've seen for the Colts in ever. What Where would you go if you were running the Colts? What would be your gut reaction on how to proceed?
I would try and do the Lamar Jackson thing if I was the Colts. I've been kind of on record with that. If you're looking at one of the two between Richardson and Levis, or the fourth pick this year and your one next year for Lamar Jackson, and taking into account the money you'd have to pay him, I know what I'm buying. And selfishly, and I'm saying I'm Chris Ballard, but now if I got out of Chris Ballard mode and went into fan of Colts mode, and you can put Lamar Jackson back there when you have a big-time running back like that, and Jonathan Taylor sitting next to you, and you've got an unblocked defensive end on a zone read, and you've got Lamar Jackson, or I've got to deal with him. Are you kidding me? I think it makes sense for how they would want to play there. I think it would be a great fit there. So that's where I would go. I just feel like Lamar, whatever anybody's hiccups are or holdups are with Lamar, I know this guy's on the field. He's going to play quality football. We're going to win games. I know what I'm buying. It might be more expensive, but at least I know what I'm buying.
Then what's the ceiling for Anthony Richardson, who obviously, you know, dazzled at the combine, but there's the player too from all the tape?
I would say that he's had some individual moments. Like Josh Allen, and that's a comparison people like to make. Josh Allen had great games, had great stretches at Wyoming throughout his career. There was more body of work to go off of. And then with Richardson, you're kind of picking out a throw here or a run there. Like there's not – you're buying on the future here, and something you really haven't seen consistently. But the payoff's huge. I think he would make sense for the same reasons I talked about Lamar being able to be in the backfield and run the ball like that. Richardson can give you that as you try and develop him as a passer. But again, it's an unknown. I just feel like I know what Lamar Jackson looks like on an NFL field.
This is still part of sort of Mark's questions.
Yes. Yeah. Does he strike you as the biggest risk of the first round or the whole draft? Like a guy that can sink you, swim your draft class?
The way I look at, if you look at all these, wow, I did cut, that cost you one. You thought you were getting an extra one, but apparently
we're digging
count.
In. We're digging in.
This is still on the Anthony Richardson. So, I mean, I'm still feeling a little burnt because I wanted to hear more on DJ
back.
About Stroud. It could come back.
We can come back to Stroud. So with Richardson, if you look at
the
quarterbacks.
It's like the most Greg thing ever. Just,
I know.
Like,
he won't let it go.
He brought it up.
No, and it's a good conversation. With Richardson, look at him as a lottery ticket. If you looked at all those guys costing the same amount of money, a first round pick, and then one of the lottery tickets pays out significantly more than any other, that's Richardson. But you know, it does come with significant risk. Because
Steichen, though, he feels like the right coach for either him or Lamar, by the way. I mean, Lamar would be even better, but I don't know if anyone's stock has risen more than Shane Steichen this offseason, just like hearing everything that everyone says about him. I'm like suddenly confident he'll know what to do if they get a mobile quarterback.
Yeah, from being around him when he was with the Chargers, he's a really good teacher. And I think sometimes we, you know, talk about coaches and game plan and all those kind of things. There's still an element of development with these guys. He's a really good teacher. So that's gonna go well with whatever quarterback they end up with.
Would you like to circle back to C.J. Stroud?
Oh, wow. Now you're putting me...
Sure. So we're talking quarterbacks.
What if I just give a comment? Then it's not technically a question.
Yeah.
It doesn't
count
as one.
That's
the
way to do it.
All right.
So with Stroud...
Beat the system. Don't you dare ding.
The system that we created.
You can go back and watch, especially more last year. You see it a little bit this year as well. When he had to reset, when he got moved off of his spot, reset and throw the football, his accuracy went down. It was pretty consistent. That was kind of the issue with him. That's why when you look at, you know, the Georgia game, it carries so much weight because he was able to not only – it's not like he's not athletic enough to get away from pressure. It was, can you get away from pressure? Can you then throw on the move? Can you reset? Can you make things happen off the script, off schedule? And he did that there. So that, to me – that was the difference between him and Bryce Young. And the other thing is...
Right. I'm not arguing that he should be ahead of Bryce Young. I can see that.
No, they're going to be one. They're going to be one and two. And then the other thing is it's kind of beauty in the eye of the beholder. So with C.J. Stroud, his feet are always in the ground. He's always on balance. The ball comes out from the same arm slot, and he's consistently accurate in those instances. Bryce Young, I was talking to John Beck about it the other day, who's been training both these guys. And I said, with Bryce, it feels like you could do an exercise with him where he could drop and you could just say 11 o'clock, 9 o'clock. Like you could put his arm angle wherever you want and he can still get the ball exactly where it needs to be.
A little more next level. But I guess it's maybe that you're right. It's a type of quarterbacks I tend to like too. It's like he kind of not that C.J. Stroud and Phillip Rivers are playing at all in the same NFL, but in the way that you're just like, that's going to be an NFL quarterback. You could tell in NC State. I almost feel like you could feel that about C.J. Stroud.
So one of the interesting things, though, and Beck had Herbert going through the process, and as we've talked about this on here before, about his development coming through the draft process and then getting on the field. And he was like, I think people don't understand. Herbert's first year, his athleticism was what was making a lot of that excitement happen. It was his ability to extend plays, not even, you know, not maybe on the right read, not making, you know, the right decision, but was athletic enough to buy time, absorb bodies, move around, make unbelievable plays. It's hard when you get labeled as a pure pocket passer now. You know, it's just, you have to acquire the knowledge to be able to use that within a stationary game. You can't do that anymore. You're not going to be given the time to acquire that knowledge. You're already going to be out.
It's kind of funny, though. I mean, it's just funny to think about, like, 6 years ago and, like, that someone would be criticized for being too much of a pocket passer.
Yeah, no, it's but it's different. It's, like, it's totally different. I mean, if you look at...
Oh, like, here's a young quarterback. Oh, he's not athletic enough, which is, like, he's plenty athletic.
Yeah. They're going to throw them all on the field right away, and you have to be able to use your legs to survive until you get the knowledge to be able to play purely from the pocket.
And knowing – so Young and Stroud do go 1-2 in some order. When you saw that trade that the Panthers made,
yeah,
they give away their best wide receiver, multiple first-round picks. In your mind, is it going to be worth it? Are these guys – do they have the potential to be good enough to make up whatever you gave up, because now you have a star at quarterback for a decade plus?
Yeah, I think – it's always worth it if you get the quarterback. If you, you know, as much as I love DJ Moore and I'm excited to see what he does in Chicago, you're not going to give up too much if you get your quarterback for the next 10 plus years. That's not, there's no such thing as an overpay. And I like the fact they did it early, because now they can go through the whole process, get the people involved they want to get involved, go do private pro days. It's a difference too. Trust me, if they called Bryce Young right now while they hold the 9th pick and said, hey, we want to fly out there and do a private workout, he's going to tell them, no, we're not doing that. So now that they're all the way up there, they can do all their homework on all
they
the top
know,
guys.
They must right?
I think so. Okay. I think they do. I think it's going to be Bryce Young. We'll see.
So the fourth quarterback, Will Levis, like, you have him in, I looked at your top 50. You have him as the 12th best player right now. But in your mock, and I mean, like, you can see how this would happen. Yeah. He tumbles down the boards to number 19, Tampa Bay. And Bucky Brooks has a new mock out where he falls out of the first round entirely.
Yeah.
So this is the quarterback that clearly people are very split on, and the variance is high. How is he the 12th best player, and he's going to fall that far? I mean, it's quarterback need, but you could just see everyone. I always assume everyone's just going to jump up for quarterbacks, and they're not going to let Will Levis slide
right.
that
Would
fall
they disrespect
if you need a quarterback.
You that much to not draft your 12th best player
no,
that,
he,
for that
he,
long?
First of all,
that's
yeah,
not that, a question. Mm-hmm. That's not one of the questions.
It's a very, very
rescind
snarky,
that question.
Yeah.
It's a
snarky
comment. That counts for two questions. That's the rules.
Damn it, Greg.
Edit that out on the show.
Look, I think when it's all said and done, and you play around with different scenarios, and Bucky did it in his latest one, and I had him looking at it. To me, it's like, okay, Mac Jones, we were talking about him being the 3rd pick. He ends up being the 15th pick. Justin Fields, we thought, would go up there top, and all of a sudden Carolina passed on him, and, you know, things happen, and quarterbacks end up dropping. So it's exploring different scenarios of what could happen. Look, I do, and we've talked about this before, I do mock drafts off what I hear, not what I would do. I do my top 50 off my eyes. I do my mock draft off my ears. And I think when it's all said and done, once we take this winding road, once we get to the draft, I think all four of these quarterbacks are going to go really high.
Yeah, like the Raiders just sit out there as a team like that.
They're a Levis
team. They're not going to just let a Levis fly by them.
Yeah, everybody I talk to around the league pegs Levis with the Raiders. Like, that's a spot there.
Maybe let's wrap the quarterback talk then to get to Hendon Hooker while we're here. Because you've been higher on him throughout the process, I feel like, than the rest of the draft.
You know what?
Cognoscenti.
Yeah.
And now it feels like that's becoming the trendy thing to do. They're catching up to DJ. Would you like to stick it in anyone's eye in particular?
No, but this is...
Right in their eye.
This is the way it happens when you're with teams, too, because you'll go in... you know, say you're an over the top scout. So you come in after the area scout. So the area scout gives a low grade to Hendon Hooker. And then you come in and you give him, you know, and let's just say if you're working for a team that does rounds, you know, say they gave him a 4th round grade, you come in and say, I think this guy's a 2nd round grade. I've put myself out there. I'm a Hendon Hooker guy. And then all of a sudden you go through the draft meetings and like the quarterback coach gives him like a mid 1st round grade and like, I don't understand why you don't like this guy. And you're not a Hendon Hooker. I'm like, no. I thought I was really going here. Now you just leapfrogged me.
Now that Tannenbaum just went big and he had
him
in the top 5 of his mock draft. Around the NFL listener, Mike Tannenbaum, and the Tulane grad.
This would be one he might plug in on, too.
Yeah, so we love you, Mike.
There you go.
Mr. T.
No, he's a nice man. I to me, I like Hendon Hooker a lot. I do think he's going to be a solid starter. I wish he was a little younger. I wish he was not coming off injury. That is what it is. But can we just take a quick...
But that's like a big deal. He's 4 years older than these guys. I mean, yeah, isn't that like a monster deal?
I know, but it's not as... I was just talking to somebody that you know as well, an assistant GM this morning, and we were talking about this. He's not on a team that's going to take a quarterback. And he was like, the H thing's overrated. That's not, you can't look at it like that anymore. He's like, we're thinking about even take quarterbacks out of it. He's like, you tell me this guy, we go through the medical process. The doctor says, this is going to be a one contract player. You're like, great. Give me 4 great years. That's enough for all of us to get another extension here. And we'll figure it out when we go along. Yeah. Like that thought process has changed a little bit.
You have him to the Vikings. He would sit behind Cousins this year because he's coming off an ACL
Nothing long term with Kirk right now.
So he'd be 26, but their theory is, well, he could play till he's 36, and that's a lot better than searching for eight other quarterbacks.
Yes, even if it would give you 7-8 years, that's tremendous. And 5 of those years are going to be cost controlled, cheap starters.
Did you have an aside, by the way?
I had an aside because I wanted to take a quick pause.
That,
I don't know
is
if you
that
guys,
a question?
I don't know if you guys do commercials, but I was just thinking about you guys.
Are you making us take a break?
So that's all exciting. I'm saying is this: I love baseball. You love baseball,
sure.
Greg, you love baseball. You do not.
No.
So you're going to enjoy this.
Okay.
But I wanted to do something. I was trying to do my homework and prepare, you know, like you guys, I tried to prepare for this interview. And I said, let me go and try and find a picture. If I can find a picture, a baseball picture of Dan and Greg, maybe they've been to a game together or something.
We have.
So I was able to locate a picture of these guys at a ball game. We have it. Yep. We have a picture over here. Yeah, there they are. Look at that. Look at Mark. Aren't they cute? Don't they just look wonderful?
That's an adorable photo of the two of them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Branch Rickey, an elderly, overweight man, and a little boy next to him.
Now, I know you work on TV a lot. We love what you do with the draft, that you've never had your own podcast before. Yeah, you do realize this is an audio medium.
We're pulling people from audio into video.
That's
how
they call
him
the wholesome assassin.
Yeah. Come on, guys. Come on.
Hey, along those lines.
The wholesome assassin strikes back.
Would you rather, and then we're going to take a break. All right, Graver. Would you rather.
I tried to tee that up.
The San Diego Padres win their first World Series in team history this October or hit 29 of 32 in your final mock,
including the
top 12?
Really?
Including the top 12.
Padres. What? Mock drafts is a crapshoot. Like you know.
Because that's with your ears, you said.
But 29 of 32 would be talked about forever.
Right.
I know, but
anybody, no human has done that.
Anybody can put a list together and guess. Like, anybody can do that. It's meaningful to win a World Series.
I can assure you that's true.
See, exactly.
I do one annually, and it's
But think about, I wonder what your agent would say. What a negotiation tool that
I
would be.
I think DJ is saying this from a relative position of security, that he knows he's doing a good job. You know,
how much do you make?
He's confident in his work. He doesn't need the mock draft. Whereas the Padres, you know, that would be a miracle.
So I told
Mayock, we haven't heard a lot from him lately. You know,
I told Bucky, if the Padres win the World Series, I think I'm going to get Kevin Harted. Like, I'll be at the game and I'm going to try and get up on the podium. And they're like, well, who are you? What are you doing? Hard. Get out of here.
Get Harted.
Yeah. I mean, if they can do it to Kevin Hart, they could definitely do it to you.
Oh, yeah, that's a fact.
All right. We'll take a break and we'll talk more with DJ.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
All right, we're back. Justin Graver, have you ever met Gravedigger, our producer? I know a lot of people.
Of course I have.
Behind the glass, people aren't allowed to make eye contact with you in the studio and around this building. That's in your rider, but that's Justin, and he's a good person.
Hold on, just real quick. Let me get – okay, I was going to get in Dan's light so you could see me. Hey, good to see you. Nice to see you back there, Graver. How are you doing, bud?
Gravedigger is a UT alum, a big-time college guy, and I said, do you have any questions you want to ask Daniel Jeremiah?
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, first I'd love to
How many questions are we in so far?
What is that, 9,
I feel like we have
10?
More than we thought.
I think we're lost at sea.
Okay, we've done 10 so far.
10. Okay, so we got 11 left. Keep that in mind, everybody.
And well, this is number 11.
DJ's starting to give us the side eye.
We're good. What do we got?
DJ,
here?
I want to say thank you first for hooking me up with the Titans Chargers tickets last fall. That was awesome. I do have a question for you here.
This is what we do. We're just a man of the people over here.
I mean, you've seen him many times since.
No, he's already thanked me multiple times because he's a good human being.
Justin, you're our producer. We're not supposed to show that Daniel's a good guy.
No. Oh, right.
Whenever possible, we present him in a critical light. Okay. So we're going to cut that out of the show. Go on.
Sure. Here's my question. How much do you weigh positional value versus talent? For example, a guy like Bijan Robinson from my alma mater, who's number three on your big board, but if he's such a knockout talent, why aren't teams more okay with foregoing the positional value and just taking a guy that they know is going to be a plug-and-play playmaker?
That's a good one.
That's my producer.
That's actually the best question I've got today, to be honest with you. Maybe he might have earned another one back there. That was impressive.
They can't be too good. Then he doesn't get any more questions.
Right.
We need to internally decide that one.
Cut him off. To me, running back things is standalone. Like, you can talk about other positions as well. The running back thing is unique. I will say with Bijan Robinson, he's my third highest graded player. So when you watch the player and you put the grade on him, what he's going to be, I think he's going to be a multi-year Pro Bowl player. I think he's going to be one of the top backs in this league, you know, during the next 5-6 years. So with me, there is definitely, you know, positional value. If you've got somebody that's close in terms of the grade that you gave him, you're obviously going to lean with pass rushers. Basically every other position you're going to lean just because of the lifespan, the longevity of that position. But I don't buy into this. You can't take a running back in the first round. I just think when it comes to running backs, all their carries have to be meaningful. You're not going to waste their carries. If we all agree that they're going to play 5-6 years of really their top shelf football and then it falls off a cliff, which has been exactly what's happened, I don't want to spend 3 years giving you the football on a crappy team and I'm wasting 3 years of your carries. And that's why, and I know they will never do it because that's not their philosophy, but I continue to make the case that the Philadelphia Eagles, where they're picking at 10, it's rare to have a team that's that good that's picking in that spot that's literally a Super Bowl caliber team right now. Every single one of Bijan Robinson's touches for the next 5 or 6 years are going to be for a playoff team. They're all going to matter. And so if you look at him as a playmaker instead of just a running back, I mean, the 49ers are not dumb. There's a reason they saw where their team was and Christian McCaffrey could come in there and do an unbelievable job and maybe get them over the hump. I think Bijan Robinson, you get that. He's cheaper, he's younger, and you're going to have a 5-6 year runway here with him.
Don't you think your guy Howie could zig when everyone's not expecting him to zag?
Or I hope
whatever
he does.
The reverse is? I guess that is a question.
That is a question.
Yeah, that is a question. And because if you look at the tenth player contract, wasn't Garrett Wilson was 10th last year, right?
I believe so, yes.
So that's 4 years, $20 million. That's not a crazy running back contract.
No.
$5 million a year for one of the best running backs in the league. And I think Howie would like it because everyone, you know, paints them as the analytics team. And they are certainly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, part of analytics is like once everyone starts going in the same direction as you, then you zag and you stick it to them.
And also to your point, you know, there's self-survival involved with these front offices. Just like you were saying, they don't care so much about the second contract. Give me the guy who's going to make our team better for 3 or 4 years, and we'll figure out everything else after, right? Maybe there'll be a sea change in time. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think that's totally, you know, it's a different topic but related. That's why I love comps. And some people, there's lots of people, there's a weird section of the population who hates comparisons. And everybody, you know, comparison is the thief of joy, and you hear all this crap, right? Mm. It's valuable because if I'm telling you this is Edgerrin James, if this guy reminds me of Edgerrin James when he was in the league, like, holy crap, you take Edgerrin James and put him with Jalen Hurts, and now all of a sudden you've got DeVonta Smith and we've got A.J. Brown. Like, we're cooking with gas now.
I mean, I wonder if we get to a world where, like, if you're a player that could play multiple positions, you're a top athlete in your town, why become a running back? Yeah. If this is your career, you're an isolate outside of kickers and punters. Like, your career money-making opportunity seems completely out on an island compared to where it was decades ago. And it's like, why do this with your career?
And, well, it's hard because kids like to touch the football. So you can say and you can preach to them about money, but when you're playing in the backyard and when you're playing for your junior high and you're playing for your high school and I get to play running back and I get to touch the ball every single play versus not knowing, you know, at Punxsutawney High how my quarterback can actually get me the football at wide receiver. If I'm going to play corner in
the
high school, they're going to go
flag football. So right from the beginning, that's where the best players are.
So that's kind of how that works. But I would always argue and lobby for high school receivers and I would see them and be like, just play corner. just every year the receiver group in the draft board, we're having to lop off all these names and like put them on the sideboard on the free agent board. We have too many corners. We're like, did anybody else play corner? Do we have any other corners? Like, are we too low? We got to put more corners up there. So that's why I've always said, for young kids, if you want to get to the NFL and you've got a choice between those two positions, play corner.
All right, if you have a pick in the middle of the first round and you need a weapon and you're trying to stack this tight end versus the wide receiver class, kind of agnostic. Let's say a team like the Patriots who could use both. I mean, it's not like they couldn't use a tight end. I guess they have Henry and Gesicki. Whatever, though. They're good long-term player. Like, just these players specifically,
like
how
Greg
are you
working
comparing
this thing
them?
Out in his mind? Like, it's a little scrimmage, a little scrimmage taking place
saying,
there.
They could just use a good player regardless. Yeah. But, like, how do you stack the top of the tight end class versus the top of this wide receiver class?
I love Dalton Kincaid. So
he's ahead of the rest.
For me, he's such a dynamic player. And I hate the fact that we didn't get to see him healthy through the process. He had a little bit of a back, so we didn't get to see him at the combine. I think he said the other day at the pro day he wasn't able to do anything. He's going to be able to run routes sometime in mid-April, and he'll show teams. I talked to teams about the physical and the medical. They said he passed, so it wasn't, you know, like this guy's going to go on this long fall. But he is so gifted. And to me, when you're looking at tight ends, guys that can separate and then also guys that can make combat catches. Usually you kind of get one or the other. You know, you get somebody that's undersized that can get away from people, or you get a big, you know, physical slug that just catches balls and guys on his back all the time. He can do both. He is a really, really good player.
We have not talked about a defensive player yet.
I had one more follow-up about tight end.
Go for it.
Let's do the ship. So with the tight end draft, so you have two guys, Kincaid and Mayer, in your latest draft going in the first round. Why do you think highly drafted tight ends in the last decade or so have not met expectations? Do you think it's more about like the team they landed with in the scheme, or is there something more to it from the going from one level to the next?
Well, if you'd have told me, I mean, I thought Kyle Pitts would emerge as the best tight end in the NFL, like
right
fast, and it hasn't all clicked. It hasn't all come together there. Obviously his first year, I think you saw more. Last year was kind of frustrating watching it, but it's a good point. Teams have been able to find, you know, big time tight ends in the middle rounds and some of these high picks. Hawkinson's been a perennial Pro Bowler. He might not be, it's weird to say he's a Pro Bowler, but he's not like an elite player.
He's kind of like a Pro Bowler really that like Andy Dalton got a Pro Bowler too.
Yeah,
in there.
But he's been to a couple. But he's been traded already for they traded him for a two this last year. Good, really good, but not hasn't lived up to where he was picked. Noah Fant did not emerge is what you hoped he would be. I think there's, you know, it's a traits position where you want guys that are big and athletic, but it's also a nuanced position. And I think in college, it's just, you don't have any of that, you know? So in terms of some of the polished route running stuff in college, you're catching a seam, you're catching a bubble, you know, it's just, you're not as refined. So it's a little more difficult to evaluate.
We have a team of ATL every year that we pick a team to ride with, and it was the Lions this season. And I love what you have done in your mock, because you have Kalijah Kancey.
Yeah.
Brad Holmes, the GM, he had spent years with Aaron Donald. He knows what Aaron Donald can do. There's comps there, obviously. I just think he's a perfect fit for the Lions. What is can he be Aaron Donald-ish? Is that too rich of a comparison?
Yeah, I mean, there's just nobody like Aaron Donald in terms of the explosiveness and the strength that he has. You know, one thing talking to D-line coaches, they love guys that are a little bit short with long arms, because it's an unbelievable leverage advantage, you know, when you can get
that's
underneath.
That's like Greg and I.
There you go. Exactly. What, have we measured those yet?
Well, I mean, we've got the short part then.
But he doesn't – he is so, like, explosive and dynamic and quick. He can get up the field, get on edge, and go. The difference is Aaron Donald could put his hands right in your chest plate and, you know, just run you flash over. He's not – that type of power. He doesn't possess that type of power, but it's hard to find guys that can penetrate and guys that can be disruptors on the interior. I contend it's harder to find those guys than it is to find edge rushers. So when you're having a debate in the room about an edge versus a defensive tackle, to me, I think Chris Jones, Quinnen Williams, Aaron Donald, those guys can impact the game more from in there running pass than you can coming off the
edge. I'm going to answer his question. It is unfair to compare him to perhaps the greatest football player of all time.
Well, I mean more that there's flashes, though.
No, but it's the role. Like, to me, you can say I'm not drafting the same player, but I'm drafting for that role. He's going to play the Aaron Donald role for his team, and he has some Aaron Donald traits. He doesn't have – Aaron Donald's, you know, again, could go down as the greatest defensive lineman of all time.
Another one from you, Gravedigger.
Okay.
What number are we at, too? Graver Digger.
This is going to be 16.
Graver Digger.
16, okay.
This is going to be 17.
Keep that in mind.
TJ is counting the time.
Don't be
right
the
now.
Reporter and ask like the terrible fast, question, fast. The final question in the press conference.
Right, when you're writing your own feature about offensive linemen and you're burning questions during the media time. Go ahead.
Okay, this is following up on the tight end comments. I'm curious if you think, with it being such a strong tight end group all the way through, does that depth lead teams to waiting, knowing that there isn't much drop-off from, you know, the first guy to the fourth or fifth guy? Or does it push up those elite guys even higher because they're the best of a really good group?
I've been leaning towards, you know, we could see some of these tight ends drop just because there's so many of them. But the counter-argument to that is I don't think this receiver class is anywhere near what we've had the last few years. So, and I think if you listen to some of the stuff coming out of the meetings, Brandon Staley, and it wasn't the only one, but I just remember that one caught my ear, where he said, you know, somebody asked him about receiver, and he's like, we're looking for playmakers. Like, they try and just categorize these guys as playmakers. So to Greg's point about how you would stack receivers mixed in with tight ends, I think teams are going to say we need more firepower. So I don't think that that drop is going to happen. I think they're going to say we need difference makers, guys that can make plays, whether you're a tight end, whether you're a receiver, we're gonna take them. And I think the tight end group is just more impressive than the receiver group.
How is Jackson Smith and Jigba, you know, maybe at the top of this class, but not everyone's favorite receiver class, so overlooked in terms of like top end when he's on the same team as, just explain it to me like I'm an idiot. He's on the same team as Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, and he produces way more than most of them. And I see this in free agency too. I feel like everyone is always grading the previous year instead of just like grading the whole thing. If he had come out last year, wouldn't he have been a higher pick? And then he knocks out the three cone, the shuttle, like he's got the great timing. Like why wouldn't he seem like a very safe receiver pick? Because it seems like he can't miss. If I'm a GM, I just want to keep having picks where they're like, oh, that guy's smart. He keeps taking good players. Like, and there's been very few bad receiver picks lately.
Yeah, and especially coming out of Ohio State. He's a slot, so that's it. So you've got Wilson and Olave on each side working against the number one and number two corners, and you're in there working against
the college. I get it, but that's what they said about Justin Jefferson, too, when he was coming out.
Yeah, but Justin Jefferson's taller, longer, faster, like all those things. You know, he jump above the rim, like all those different areas, he's going to be over him. And Justin was also coming off of a 20-touchdown season his last year. Smith and Jigba didn't even play this last year. So those are some of the differences there. And to me, Jefferson, that was the whole, is he a slot? Like, no. He had played outside. He had played inside. He could do everything. Every team that I talk to and when I evaluate Smith and Jigba, I think he's going to be a 80, 90, 100 catch guy in the slot. He's going to be high volume player. And there's obviously teams that covet that and have that need, and they're going to love him. And there's other teams that are going to say, we have somebody we can play in there. We want to get somebody that plays outside.
One of the most surreal things that occurred last season was Mr. Irrelevant yanking a team to the NFC title game. For, you know, if you're not a quarterback needy team, but you want to go find that gem, it's probably popular now to focus on one person as like this year's Brock Purdy. Maybe slightly annoying to you if that's the case. But is there someone hanging out in the deep distance who someone might grab late who has sneaky upside, a little bit of a gem?
Well, I'm going to turn around and ask you a question. Don't count this one. This one's free of charge. So when Debo had all that success as a receiver, we did a thing, and I came up with a really creative way of saying it, finding Debo. Okay, so it was like finding Debo. Okay.
Got it.
We've still been searching for the next Debo Samuel. We haven't found him. Like, there's some guys that are different. So I need a catchy pun for Purdy. Like, how do we try and find the next Purdy? Anything? Can we?
I'm trying to think of Pixar films from the 2000s.
So, look, everybody's going to try and find that. You know, it's darn near impossible. I still contend, you know, with Brock Purdy, if you take him and throw him in a different building in a different scenario,
it'd be chaos.
Who knows what it looks like? He is the perfect match. There's a thing, I don't know if you guys have read up on the S2 test. Have you guys done any work on this? So it's a processing test that are now being given to especially quarterbacks. It's been big in baseball. So it'll be like, you know, six shapes pop up and one's different. How quick can you identify the one that's different? It's how quick you can process information. If you think about for baseball, pitch recognition and all that stuff. Like, it's a very valuable tool, and it's made its way over to the football the last 5 or 6 years. Josh Allen was off the charts on it. Mahomes tested off the charts on it. Last year in the entire quarterback class, Brock Purdy had the highest number, had the highest grade on that. This year it's Bryce Young. So processing information.
Is this public info?
No. But part is now. So, so to me, with Brock Purdy and his ability to process, paired with Kyle Shanahan's system, with all the pieces in place, hey, just bing, 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 get it out, get it out, get it out, get it where he needs to go. He was perfect. He was perfect fit. If you're going to go play action and ask him to power comebacks down the field in a, you know, in a different offense, you might not see the same results. That's all I'm getting at.
Your final question,
if,
Greg.
If I think Mark is just in love with Brock Purdy. That's...
Oh, it's a great story.
It's a great story.
Wonderful.
If your son had been born like 10 years later, it'd be Brock, not Colt McCoy Sessler.
Well, I didn't name him Colt McCoy Sessler. There's no McCoy involved in it.
Brock Sessler is almost worth having another kid for.
It's already possible.
I did ask Matt Campbell at Iowa State, his coach. I said, what did we miss on Purdy coming out? Like, what was it? Any other cool phrases? He just talked about, he used the phrase competitive excellence. And then I'm like, okay, what does that mean? And then he just went through, like, every single practice was like the Super Bowl, this guy. Like, even when, you know, they lost some of the pieces around him, you know, it was just every single day. Like, you don't know it unless you're around it and you can feel it and sense it. Like, this guy's just wired, like ultra, ultra, ultra competitive.
Basically, my six-year-old son in Little League.
Is
every
he like
practice,
that?
Yes. It's literally game 7 in the World Series.
Locked in?
Practice. He's obsessed.
Competitive excellence.
Which one?
Harry Hanzus.
Harry.
Yeah. All right. Greg, your final question.
You have a decent gap here for your top cornerback between Witherspoon and
Gonzalez.
And Gonzalez. Why?
I think Witherspoon's just a better overall player. And so he's not, you know, you're going to see bigger, faster with Gonzalez. I just think Witherspoon, in terms of the instincts, I fell in love with him from that standpoint. Mm. He sees everything so fast. He plays with no hesitation. I was around Asante Samuel Sr. when I was with the Eagles, and I've seen Jr., you know, with the Chargers. And guys that can play off and trust their eyes, they just go and make plays. Like, this guy's going to be able to make a ton of plays, and he's incredibly feisty and tough. The days of saying the old clip that everybody would pull out of Deion saying, they pay me to cover, they don't pay me to tackle. Not in this NFL, not anymore. Mm. Not with as much outside zone as you're seeing, not with how they're bringing corners into support, because as an offensive play caller, I can find out who your worst tackler is, and we're not going to block him. We're going to block everybody else, and we're going to make him be the force player. So to me, he combines that feistiness and playmaking, and all kind of comes together in a really nice package.
All right, final question for Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network Zone, draft guru. And we thank him for his time. And he has a podcast. Truth. You ever think about what we do, and specifically here, what you do? And every year, it's a new draft class, a new breakdown of prospects within the same parameters, and think, what is this for? Am I happy? Is this how I want to be remembered? Am I a hamster on a wheel? Sometimes you can't even see a pattern until it's right in front of you. Your thoughts.
Good question. To me, there are moments. There are moments when I'll tell you exactly when it is. I try and get all the guys watched in the run up to the combine so that I can talk about them when they get on the line to run. I want to be able to talk about them that I've actually seen them and not, you know, read out of the research packet. So
it's a lot of airtime. It's about 35 hours.
It's a lot of time to fill. So I go position by position when I'm watching them. And when you're watching interior offensive linemen, and it'll take you a week to get them done. And it's like, I've just dedicated a week of my life to watching Mac interior offensive lineman. And then, like, I'll see a play that's really exciting. I'm like, babe, hey, babe, check this out. What do you see this scoop block here real quick? This guy from Northern Michigan's pretty good. And she's like, I don't care.
But that's the good sign. Because if it was like, if it was the point where, like, Ominous Synth is under you and you see the Mac, he trucks somebody, you're just like, good block by that player. Make notation. Like, you haven't gone mad yet. I wonder if that's something, if you do this too long.
It's fun. You know what? I love, one of my favorite things along those lines is I have an old phone, which I don't use for anything except for texting a couple guys in the league, so I'll be watching tape.
Whoa,
and then that
cool.
that frees me up to use the other phone, because if you're on the phone with somebody, you can't video. So if I'm sitting there watching tape, and we'll just be sitting there on the phone talking to each other for a long time, and I'll go, oh, hold on, this play, I'll use that other phone as a camera, take a video of the play, text him, and then he'll be we have these text changes going back and forth of these different plays.
Hearing about the process behind
your we got to hear more of
genius.
That.
Well,
now we're talking how the sausage gets made. Oh! Anything else? Anything else? We have Dan. We're over time with Dan Jeremiah.
No, I think
we should set him free.
We've done enough.
What do you guys
Daniel's
do?
Daniel's got many, kind of quarter zips that you could wear to play golf, but also to work out, but also to the office to go out and buy. So we
and go to weddings and funerals.
Yeah. It's versatile. It's very versatile. You have stepped up your wardrobe, my friend.
Yes, buttons.
Somebody got a new contract. That's
collars, buttons. Yeah.
By the way, I didn't know Structure was still in business. Apparently, it's still a thing.
I was waiting for it.
God is
on fire.
That's why they call him the Wholesome Assassin. Check him out on Path to the Draft with our friend Colleen Wolf and everywhere else. No more plugs necessary. Daniel, thank you, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you, man.
All right. We will be back later this week. Till then, heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.